superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
How is Dak Prescott, Coach?
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I mean, he looks great. I mean, he really does. I mean, he's in here every day, so I can't say enough about the progress he's made.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
It was a great day when his contract was completed for everybody here.
The Rich Eisen Show.
How about them Cowboys?
Earlier on the show, Fox Sports college football analyst Joel Klatt. From NBC Sports, Peter King. Coming up, Buccaneers general manager Jason Light, CNN host Jake Tapper, and now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the program. Joel Klatt, Peter King already. Jason Light, the general manager of the world champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers, is calling in right now. While we were on the air last hour, our colleague Colin Cowherd had Davante Adams on the program from the Green Bay Packers. Davante said that the Packers and Aaron Rodgers needed to, quote-unquote, iron a few things out. And similar to what Peter said, that it's not about money, it's about other things. He said that Rodgers was looking for some things from the organization. So, and that he backed him 100%, though. That's not a surprise right there. So keep an eye on that situation. And joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show is a man who's kind of on another side of things, to say the least. I mean, he's figuratively water skiing behind boats that carry trophies and get thrown from one boat to another. Fresh off a remarkable non-playing season in which he seems to have the whole band back together with free agency through that looking glass and a draft in the books. The general manager of the world champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Jason Light, back here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Rich?
I am doing better for you asking. Thank you for asking. How's life? How's life for you, Jason Light? How's everything?
Life is pretty good. It was a hectic off season. One of these days, going to realize we won the Super Bowl. So,
how did you? How did you go about it? Did you have like a list of I'm going to hit these people and I'm going to get them handled, or how many plates were you spinning at once trying to re-sign everybody that were free agents from your championship team, Jason?
Well, there are quite a few of us here. Spinning a lot of plates doing this. You know, no one person can do this on their own, so I have a great staff. We didn't necessarily prioritize any one over the other. We kind of prioritized every one of them, and everyone was unique, every negotiation, and just started. I kind of felt like the Seinfeld episode. As soon as we got one done, we'd ring the bell and, you know, and have another one and mark it up on the chalkboard. So it was we were finally able to get through all of them. At the time, I didn't realize that it hadn't been done since, whatever, 1977. If I would have known that, then I would have been a lot more stressed about it. But once Bruce made the proclamation at the boat parade, and then I doubled down and said the same thing, and then I turned around and I said, oh, no, what did I just do?
Saying that you could re-sign everybody, that you could get it done.
Yeah, meaning we could re-sign everybody. But we were confident. Guys wanted to come back. Great environment, great head coach, great ownership, great quarterback. We a lot of great players. So it wasn't as everything's a little bit strenuous getting through negotiations. They're not all easy, but at the end of the day, everybody wanted to be here. So that's exciting.
So does that make you the Lloyd Braun of general managers, if I'm not mistaken, based on your analogy right there, Jason? And who does that make Costanza's dad? Is that Arians Costanza's dad in the garage of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Maybe you could say that. Although I will still George's dad's line of Serenity Now after it's all done.
Well, you got it done, Jason. You definitely got it done. How much did Brady play a role in all of this, Jason?
Well, the fact that we extended him, were able to, you know, give us some relief on the cap was big. And the players, you know, what Tom brought to the organization as a leader, you know, is priceless. And having him and Bruce as our head coach and quarterback tandem, both excellent leaders, both very unique people, and in what they do, the way they do it, is it obviously played a huge role, and these guys wanted to come back and be a part of it again.
Well, I mean, the reason why I asked this too as well is, did he make some calls to help the band get back together here, to twist an arm, pound a table? To you, or twist an arm with one of his teammates to come back?
I think we were all pretty much on the same page, Bruce, myself, him, on that we wanted to bring back as many as we could. I don't know what conversations he had, you know, with our players, to be honest with you. I just knew at the beginning of free agency, I said, hey, I'm going to do my best to get everybody back. And that was really the last we talked about it.
And then your conversations with him, personally, Jason, I really want to dig into this as much as you're willing to share, because I'm sure you're aware that there are some other teams with first ballot Hall of Fame quarterbacks who might be having an issue with not having a say in how in a roster is fashioned around them and to their desires, and they're all pointing at your organization with you and your quarterback and saying, how come you? We can't be more like them. And what is your relationship with Brady? Do you ask him what he's interested in? Does he volunteer it? Like, what is the secret sauce that goes in right here, Jason?
That's a fair question, but he came to our team because of the great coaching that we have, the great head coach, and the great players. And he wants to play with great players. There's never been a conversation, well, you better get this guy, or we don't want that guy, or I've never talked to him about the draft. Bruce and I did mention to him leading up to the draft that we might take a quarterback. Just, we would do that with any great quarterback, but yet alone the GOAT. But I hate to sound cliche, but he trusted in the plan that we wanted to bring everybody back, and there were really never any side conversations about how far along are we with this guy, what should I do, what can we do, move on from him. He's not like that. He's a great leader, and he's got the player's trust, and he trusts us.
And so there's really never much of a conversation of you saying, well, you know, who do you like? Because again, I know this is a very touchy subject, and so I ask it gingerly, but it just seems that you've got a relationship and it all worked out. You won a championship. You extended him. That is the envy of every over 35 GOAT quarterback for their franchises. And it seems like you're on cruise control in that respect. And that's why I'm trying to figure out what the two-way street might be here to, you know, because he's got a window of opportunity in his mind and you're dressing that window of opportunity. And it seems like it's being dressed the manner in which it makes him very happy. And I'm wondering how that works with your relationship, Jason.
Well, I think he was very happy just with the players and the roster and the coaches, like I said before. And now with any great player like Tom at that position, if we're thinking about signing Gio Bernard, for example, I'll let him know, hey, thinking about signing Gio Bernard, a little push might help. He's like, I'm on it. Love that kid. You know, with Leonard last year, that's awesome. I'd love that. He'd be a great addition. I'll help you out, you and Bruce, out as much as I can. So I think he likes the fact that we tell him, you know, who we're thinking of signing every once in a while, particularly if it's going to help him at you know, on the offense. So, but in terms of having a meeting where we go over the board and talk about all of our plans, that's just not his style. He trusts us, like I said.
And then when you had Jason Light, GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, here on the Rich Eisen Show, I'm going to ask you the $64 million question here. When you talked to him about extending, was there a sense that this is the last contract extension you're going to have a conversation with him? Did he give you any indication at all how long
None.
He wants to play?
I want to keep all those conversations, most of them private, but no inkling at all. I told him if he wants to play until he's 50 and he's still playing and he feels like he can still play, he can play until he's 50. So.
And then you mentioned you and Bruce did say, heads up, we might be taking a quarterback in the draft. You did give him that heads up.
Yeah, gave him that heads up.
Okay.
And just didn't. He almost responded as if, I appreciate you letting me know. You didn't need to let me know, but I appreciate it. And whatever we have to do to make the team better.
So what do you say to Kyle Trask? Welcome to the team. There's your quarterback room with the GOAT. Understand that you might have to take his elbow during a boat parade, but other than that, like, what do you say to Kyle Trask when you welcome to the team, Jason?
Well, actually, had the chance to talk to him a few times since, and told him he's got a great opportunity with this, playing behind Tom and Blaine is a great mentor as well, and then obviously this coaching staff, Byron and Clyde Christensen and Bruce and Tom Moore. He's a great opportunity, and I think he's beyond excited about it. I think it's a great opportunity for a young quarterback to come in and see firsthand how Tom Brady operates.
Yeah,
get ready for a game.
Zero pressure
in a season.
Zero pressure, right? I mean, just like zero pressure. Just learn what you can learn, glean what you can glean, and just check Tom out all you can, I guess. That and then you point out, I mean, what a hell of a coaching staff you have of all the experience together. It seems to me that Bruce is totally energized. Not like that's ever been a question, but obviously with him coming out of retirement, that he seems re-energized. And is there any talk about how long he wants to still be at it, Jason, to you?
There, we really haven't had that talk. In this business, it's a year. 1 year seems like 10.
Right.
So, I do agree with you. He has never felt better, never looked better, and he is energized. He's got a great staff that I don't want to say we're on cruise control because he rides them like any good coach does. But he has total trust in his entire staff, offense and defense.
Well, he loves Leftwich. I mean, like he handpicked Byron. In many different ways, from being a player to being a coach. And then I know he was here when he was, out of the game and in the booth at CBS at the time, literally sitting in the chair that's to my right here, Jason, talking about how he was fearful sometimes that he might have a health episode on the sideline and he would never come back without somebody who he trusted to call the plays. And that person is Byron Leftwich. And I mean, he is beyond dynamite, and I'm wondering what you think of him long-term future for your franchise as well.
Well,
Jason.
Well, we're in a great position where we have a lot of great coaches, and Byron is one of them. Todd Bowles, Harold Goodwin. We're stacked at our coordinator position, so our special teams. I think we're going to be a lot better this year, and we improved in a lot of areas last year. So we've got a lot of great coaches, and we're focused on this year right now, but we do have a lot of coaches I think that would be great in the role of head coach.
In the few minutes I have left with you, Jason Light, GM Tampa Bay Buccaneers, what is the I guess front burning issue on your radar screen? Obviously we heard, Tom did get on a call with the Players Association and pushed reportedly to use this moment to push back against the amount of time that players are, in quotes, required to be there, or either not mandatory but kind of made to feel that way. Is there an issue with the Bucks getting your players there for Bruce to get their hands on? I mean, what's going on that front?
We're just going to have to see how it plays out here. Of course, we would like to have as many players, the less experienced players, whether it's rookies or first, second, third year guys, backups at other positions, to get them as prepared as possible. And, you know, the best way for that would for them to get as much work in as possible. But we're just going to have to see how it plays out. And our hands are tied right now. We'll see what happens. But we just want to make sure that our players, when we do report, get ready for the season and training camp and in July, that they're in the best possible shape that they can be in.
So is there what's on your radar screen now that you're post-draft, you got your undrafted free agents, you've got, you know, mandatory mini camps coming up, and obviously everything out, like literally what's on your radar screen of concern for a general manager of a world champion club right now?
Like I said, that everybody's in great shape, that we don't have a lot of injuries once we report in for training camp, and everybody's up to speed the best that they can be, so we can hit the ground running and where we left off last year. So, and to be honest with you, my what's on my radar is rookie minicamp coming up, and then taking some time off with my family, for crying out loud.
Good for you. And last one for you, Jason. I mean, I don't want to create a rift here, and that's obviously a very controversial way to start a question, but I had Bruce Arians on the NFL draft coverage live on NFL Network. He said he was the one who threw the Lombardi Trophy from one boat to the next first before Brady. Did you witness this? Is this true? Did he flip the Lombardi Trophy?
I did. I was on the boat. My family was on the boat with Bruce and saw him toss it over.
Come on.
I mean, no, it was a 2-foot toss, but
okay.
But still,
there was a moment where the Lombardi Trophy was aloft already in the air. From one boat to the other.
Yeah, you know, and Bruce was more of a rushing quarterback than a throwing quarterback. So,
so hold on a second. So did he flip it over Tom Moore to get it there? Is that what he's doing? I mean, like walk me through. Like, and was it Brady's boat that he flipped it to? Is that how that worked?
Yeah, it was a good toss. I didn't mean to take anything away from Bruce by saying he was more of a rushing quarterback, but
right.
It
okay.
was a pretty good toss. It was more like an option toss. And like I said, it was about 2 feet away, and it was done to perfection. It really wasn't a flip.
Okay, very good. And then last question on it. I could understand exactly why memories are hazy. Who caught it on Brady's boat? Did Tom catch it? Was it thrown from Arians to Brady? Or was it
that is where things get a little hazy here.
Understood. And it's not because, you know, it's been too long since the boat ride. I could ask you that question with 2 minutes after it happened. It would have been hazy at the time. So what you're saying, Jason?
You might be saying the right thing.
Okay, very good. I just want to be accurate. That's all I want. Hey, Jason, thanks for the time. I always appreciate it. Let's talk during the summer and get set for the season. Enjoy seeing the schedule coming out on Wednesday. Do you have a sense at all right now who you think you're going to be opening the season against right now? You got an inkling? What do you think?
I really don't. I don't have any sense. I just know I'm sure it'll be a very good team that we're going to have to get ready for.
And it is a Thursday. It is a Thursday night, though. They're not going to do it on a Sunday. You're planning for the first Thursday. Is that what that is?
The only inkling I have, and it's not because I have information, but the only inkling I have is that it would be a Thursday night. All but right. You know that I could be wrong there as well.
Okay, Jason. Thanks for the call. Truly appreciate it. I hope you do get that time with your family. You deserve it. Thank you.
Appreciate it. They do. Thank you.
Excellent. You got it. That's Jason Light, everybody. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Yeah, that kind of caught me. Did you see that?
Oh, I did not. That's the first I heard
this.
Yeah,
we had Bruce Arians on late Saturday on the draft. We had him on. And I don't know why I brought it up, but I brought up, you know, the Lombardi toss once again. And he said, I don't know why Tom gets all the credit for the toss because I threw it to his boat first. And we were all looking at each other on the draft set like, did he just say that? Huh? He threw the Lombardi first? Confirmed. Wow. It was just a 2-foot toss. Dad, no. Here it comes. There's Vivi Brady. Dad, no. It's still one of the most incredible.
I mean, that catch visions. Right there, up there with the immaculate reception, the Tyree catch, Odell, Santonio.
If you're referring to it being a high stakes grab, I would agree with that. What a photograph. And again, this got DM'd to us, TJ. That got DM'd to us from... Yep.
That's Chris Godwin's now wife.
Yeah. Well, the one that got DM'd was from Cameron Brate's girlfriend. Okay. Sure. Yeah.
Significant other.
But I actually took that screenshot and I put it on a t-shirt, which I showed wearing her one day.
Amazing.
Amazing. Let's take a break. I'll give a couple of cents on what I think that opening game's going to be. And then Tim Tebow news? Tim Tebow news.
Tebow.
All right. And then, of course, Bob Baffert was on Dan Patrick's show before this one. And we'll talk about what's going on with the Kentucky Derby winning horse. Yep. It's all Tom Brady's world, and we are rent payers. Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least the partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's IBOTTA in the Google Play or App Store and use my code EISEN. So now let's talk about your decision to retire. When did you make that decision?
We had talked about it as a family, you know, the weekend of after our Thursday night game this year. And
against Seattle?
Yeah.
Okay.
And which was one of those gut wrenchers that we should have won and didn't. But it really had nothing to do with it. It was time for my wife. She was done. And God bless her, 47 years in this business is enough, you know. And so it was kind of easy. But when that kick missed in Seattle, when ours went through the last game of the season,
yes,
and theirs missed,
mm-hmm.
I just got a real calming feeling that I made the right decision. And that was kind of the defining moment.
No kidding. So when you say that your wife was done, walk me and the listeners and viewers through what was she done with?
The stress of being a coach's wife, of watching my health go up and down, you know, with wins and losses, and I knew I was done too. That when we had that conversation, it says, "Yeah, you're right. There's too much to live for to die on the sideline, and there's nothing really else to do other than win a championship." And I think the Cardinals can win the championship. The talent is there. Steve Keim will do whatever he needs to do to finish off this roster, and they'll hire the right guy. So it was easy for me to step out and disagree with her for the first time in a long time.
Was there really a concern that you would have a fatal moment on the sideline, Bruce?
If you ever check my blood pressure during a game, one doctor tried to do that years ago, and he just said, I don't want to ever see these numbers again.
Are you serious?
You know, because I get a little hyped up, you know, especially with guys in striped shirts. And if it weren't for them, it would be an easy game.
Mm-hmm.
But it was last year's scares were eye-opening for me, you know, when I had cancer again. And to beat it, didn't like the way the season ended last year.
Mm-hmm.
Then to have this one torn apart with injuries, but you just know when it's time.
I mean, not like we always have a raucous time here, but you could hear a pin drop when he was here on that day talking about that. That was really something. Jake Tapper is going to join us in about 26 minutes time or 16 minutes time. I should get my math right for Jake. Here on the Rich Eisen Show, fascinating conversation with Jason Light just there. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We just had a fascinating conversation with Jason Light. It's not rocket science. Just tell your guy this is what we're doing. And I'm sure he's not. Look, no general manager wants to sit here and say, absolutely, I'm having Tom Brady help me pick the players here. But he's basically saying, you know, it kind of helps that we won a Super Bowl and he likes the guys here, so let's run it back. Like, that's the marching orders. I mean, I'd be crazy not to do it. So, but him like, hey, I'm thinking of Gio Bernard. Great, love that guy.
Can you text him? Sure. Works out.
Because also, wouldn't you also want to know what Tom's hearing too? Honestly, like,
yeah.
Tom's been around for 20 years. He's been around for 20 years. Hey, Tom, Gio Bernard, what if Tom's like, yeah, that guy was a total, you know, this, yeah. whatever. I heard right. this about this oh, guy. Yeah. Like, right. no, I wouldn't. I'd stay away from him.
He's like a scout.
I mean, Mike, like if I'm putting together a team of audio people, I'm going to ask you for your 2 cents. Now, I absolutely have to make the right decision. I understand the dangers of me equating you to Tom Brady right now in this analogy. Okay. But I'm you know, but that. Honestly,
no. But me and Brockman were talking about this. If you were going to replace me or Brockman, hypothetically, like you know that we're getting a little or older, we might whatever. If you said to me, you're going to bring in a guy to watch me,
you'd be wondering what's going on.
Exactly. I might feel just as bad as if all of a sudden some guy just sits in the chair behind me and go, like, what's this guy doing?
Now, what if you learned that I was bringing somebody in to watch you on national television without a heads up and you had a drink in your hand?
Now you're like,
and
yeah,
the whole country's watching.
Do I want to come back and be in the chair?
I still cannot believe
that's
they did
nuts.
Not. And if you know Aaron Rodgers, how do you not even give him a heads up? What do you just go like, I'll deal with it later?
It's like,
who was that? We got a lot of great Seinfeld references around here. How about Jason Light making a Lloyd Braun reference? Like, ding, put another one on the board and another one comes in. Fantastic. It was Florio last week said it was like, you know, nobody wanted to tell Raquel Welch that.
That she walked.
She walked
with her arms.
Nobody wanted to tell her. Yeah, did you not call Aaron? I told you to call Aaron.
Yeah.
Let him know that we're trading up to go get somebody. So, actually, we have a shot of me telling you that we were bringing in somebody to go ahead. No, that's there we go. Hey, Mike, we're thinking of replacing. Yeah, nah, we don't. Not with Jeff Walker.
There's my replacement behind me.
Actually, that is. Well, you brought Feller in there.
And Feller, I love Feller. He's my brother.
You are good. You've lost some weight since then.
I have.
You have.
I'm working.
So, and by the way, there's two choices for the opening game for the Bucks. There's two choices. As you look at their schedule, they're not going to put a division game. They're not putting a division game. They're not putting the Saints and Jameis Winston in that building. I don't care how many people think that that's going to be the answer. They're not having a division game. That the Bills visit the Bucks, that's not going to be it either. That's not going to be.
I know. That's not going to be it, but that's tasty.
With all nice. Due respect to
tasty.
Bills Mafia, you are
send that.
A passionate fan base. You can make the case that you are the most passionate fan base. You can make the case that you travel to Bills games and that there is going to be a different COVID-19 world and you will make it a big event and so on and so forth. You can say that you are the team to beat in the AFC, and there is a terrific argument on that front as well. This is not anything other than to say, no disrespect to you, I'm not going to go out and say, if it's not this game, I will eat a hat. I can't do that because you never know. But TJ Jefferson is already holding up the shirt. It is the Dallas Cowboys. How do you not have Dak's first game back and the Dallas Cowboys in the stadium when Brady and the Bucks are raising the banner? How is that not the game? I would be stunned if that is not the season opener that I am helping announce on from the field at SoFi Stadium in Hollywood Park on Wednesday night at 8 Eastern time on NFL Network. I would be stunned if that's not the first words out of my mouth. Cowboys at Bucks. That is a major piece of that is a monster game. Monster. I know it's a huge piece of filet mignon that Fox would absolutely want. And that Fox would absolutely want, and the league would probably love to have it maybe week 10, you know, late window on Fox, only game in town, Aikman and Buck in the booth. I know that Fox wants that game in the worst possible way, and that Thursday night to start a season is what the NFL wants to grab everybody by the lapels. You can do that with the Bills and the Bucks. It will still be of interest. Nothing beats the Cowboys and Dak's first game back at the Bucks. Nothing beats it. If you want to put the best possible foot forward, and I think the league will want to do that because you look at the ratings for everything in the COVID-19 world, many of them are not up to par for a lot of people, for a lot of sports. Some are. I mean, the Kentucky Derby numbers were terrific.
It's way up, yeah.
And the draft numbers were down this year compared to the previous year in terms of, I think, second and third. First night was terrific.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So, I don't know. Before this show, Dan Patrick had Bob Baffert on. Now, look, I don't know a damn thing about doping or anything going on. Steroids, I'm not an expert when it comes to humans, let alone horses. Okay? But, you know, Medina Spirit winning the Kentucky Derby. I think Steve Kornacki was the only one who really called it, right?
He's the only one who called it on the pre-show.
Right, and so he nailed it, and very few people did, despite the fact that Baffert has won a gajillion of these, right?
It was Baffert's only horse in the race.
And he has a 12-1 shot, had double or close to double the legal amount, more than the legal amount of a drug that is normally given to horses for pain relief and inflammation in horses. It was double the amount that was supposed to be in, that's allowed to be in the horse's bloodstream. And the folks at Churchill Downs suspended Baffert on the spot and said, we're going to take another look at this thing to see if he's disqualified. And Mandaloon would be named the winner. Here's what Bob Baffert had to say on the Dan Patrick Show today.
That specific drug is usually, it can be injectable, but the horse wasn't injected with that. So we're going through different, we check, make sure that nobody had any special creams. You know, I'm learning about it right now, but nobody handled a horse had any creams or anything like that. So we just don't know where this came from.
Do you think you've been sabotaged?
I don't know if I was sabotaged indirectly. I think it could have been somebody handled this horse, touched it, because at those levels, it's very minute. It's at a level that it wouldn't affect the horse. And it's scary. They're scary levels because I've had this problem before. I'm hoping it's a mistake. Maybe it was the wrong horse or whatever. But, it's something that I've got an investigation team working on it. But, It's horrible, Dan. It's something that I would never risk my reputation. And I train for, you know, these great horses, and I train for great clients. And it just doesn't make sense. But it's hard to, you know, people in the horse industry, they understand, you know, it's BS, but not the public.
And again, I don't know anything about the horse racing industry, so I wouldn't know if that's BS or not. I hope when he says he's learning about it right now, he's not referring to the science, but he's just still learning about what was around the horse and who could have touched the horse that wasn't part of his team.
Right.
And here is the other soundbite. This is the one that leaps out at me because it's something similar to what he said on Fox News earlier today, too.
Churchill Down came out with a really harsh statement.
Yeah.
I was shocked by it because, I think it was just a knee-jerk cancel culture kind of reaction. And they violated my due process. I mean, this usually when you get a positive ban, it's supposed to be confidential, and they wait for your split to come back, and usually takes a few weeks. And then they announce it. But it leaked out immediately. I've had this happen to me a couple of times. They just leaks out immediately. So I now have to fight this in the public.
Well, I mean, I don't know, again, what Churchill Downs was thinking about, if his due process was in fact violated. I don't know. I can't speak to any of that. All I know is that we've heard so many of these excuses before from so many people who said they didn't do steroids and they did, lying directly to Congress's face. The video of Rafael Palmeiro saying, I never did steroids. I mean, all of that business. And that's the problem for Bob Baffert, certainly since, you know, this isn't the first situation he has been in.
Yeah, it's his fifth horse in the last year that's tested.
So again, this is something that he's going to have to work against. And for this to happen, and for, you know, Churchill Downs might be like, it's going to get out. We need to get out in front of this thing.
Right.
Right. So they have to figure all that out. I just want to say this. The whole business of cancel culture, to me, it's called repercussions and having to take responsibility for actions. Some people may be wrongly accused of something and then they're canceled. We use the words cancel culture to try and make somebody's responsibility your burden. It's your fault that I'm being held responsible because you're just heaping on a pile because you want to cancel me. I have no desire to cancel Bob Baffert at all. I want to know what the hell happened. Why is this horse popping for this drug? Why has he had so many other instances of it? He has to answer that question. He can't dodge those questions by saying he's been wrongly accused because of cancel culture. Joe Jackson was cancel cultured. People got cancel cultured throughout because they were being held responsible. Now so many people are using that phrase and it just really rankles me. I don't know a single person in my business that wants Bob Baffert canceled, but I want some answers. His horse had this high level. Yeah. If it's a wrong, you know, drug test, then let's find out about it. But he has every right for his due process, and we'll see how it all plays out. But the whole cancel culture thing, just like, my God. But stick to sports, everybody. Everybody should stick to sports. But sports people should use these other terms. But everyone else, let's stick to sports. I don't have to stick to sports. I'll start throwing around words like cancel culture. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Jake Tapper. He won't stick to news. He's got a new book. That's coming up next. Can't wait to chat with Jake in a moment.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
You're the diehard Christmas truther.
I wouldn't call it that, but
I will. To me, a Christmas movie isn't a Christmas movie just because it takes place during Christmas. There really? Must be some...
Isn't that the definition of a Christmas movie?
No. The definition of a Christmas movie is, yes, it may take place during Christmas, but there is some essence of the Christmas spirit
redemption.
That is woven throughout the entire...
Saving the world?
...film.
Like Redemption.
No, like
going after loved ones.
No,
good like versus evil.
Miracle.
Do you not think that John McClane's performance and success was miraculous?
No, I don't. No.
One man wearing shoes. One man against this group of thugs.
How many movies do you see one man against a group of thugs? It just happens to take place during Christmas. That makes it a Christmas movie.
You don't think that John McClane in any way was intended to be a Christ figure, symbolically?
Absolutely not.
The stigmata on his feet mean nothing to you? Nothing?
He's not wearing a shirt. He's bleeding.
His shoes are taken off. He took off his shoes. That's why they shot the glass.
There is.
Whoever shot the glass in the Bible? I mean, like, what are we talking about here?
I don't think they had glass.
So
back
Christmas
then.
Movies have to only have, like, be limited by what is experienced in the year zero?
People have to have some feel good thing at the end. Like, It's a Wonderful Life. Me and Rich, we talk about
right. The angel gets his wings. Which angel got its wings?
John McClane. All right.
Please.
John McClane comes to, on Christmas Eve, comes to try to fix his life, right? Okay. With his wife, Holly. Her name is Holly.
Like deck the balls, deck the halls with boughs of.
Is her name Molly? No, her name is not Molly.
Nope.
Her name is Holly.
Okay.
All right. The entire film takes place on Christmas Eve. Start to finish. It's not just like one scene. The entire film. Christmas references throughout the movie. There is a Judas character, right? I mean, there is a pregnant woman at Nakatomi Plaza. There is reference after reference of miracles and one man sacrificing himself to the point that he has stigmata, bloody feet. That just happens? You're like, oh, they shot out the window. Yes, why do you think the screenwriter had them shoot out the window so that he could have bloody feet?
This debate is over. You guys just got owned by Jake.
I did not get owned.
You got owned by Jake.
I might have lost to a puppet. I just might have lost to a diehard puppet.
I don't know what that means.
I'm not a puppet.
You're the puppet. You're the puppet.
He's your hero, Chris. He's your hero. He's like your John McClane.
He really is my John McClane.
Oh, my God.
He's my hero.
So funny.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show here on Peacock and this radio station. I love this man. I don't care who knows it. I don't know how he does it. And it is everything that he does. He is back here on the Rich Eisen Show, Chief Washington Correspondent for CNN, the host of The Lead with Jake Tapper, State of the Union with Jake Tapper. And he's got a new novel out. I love The Hellfire Club. It is a page turner. And The Devil May Dance. I cannot wait to read the latest novel from Jake Tapper. How are you, Jake?
I'm so good, and I love you so much. But I don't know why you bring up all the one area where we disagree. You and I agree on so many things.
Yes.
In life.
Yes.
In entertainment, in broadcasting, and you constantly bring up the one thing where we disagree. And you know what? I've been holding this in reserve. But I, you know, because of spoilers, I don't want to spoil the movie for people.
Okay.
But the pivotal moment in Die Hard,
yes,
the pivotal moment where John McClane is not going to survive. The whole mission is going to be a failure. He is going to die. Holly is going to be killed, etc. Holly is her name.
Yes.
And then he sees a Christmas display with presents and Christmas tape.
Mm-hmm.
This is the climax of the movie. And we don't know that he does this until later, with the Christmas tape that only exists because it's Christmas at Nakatomi Plaza, he tapes the gun to his back and thus surprises the bad guy and saves the day, period. Spoilers. It's been long enough,
Jake Tapper, and you're, again, referring to the fact that I say Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. You say it is, and we just showed that setup for our Peacock audience, now our radio audience joining us here. I just set that just to set the stage for the fact that for fans of yours, Jake, and I am one. I am a huge fan of yours, Jake.
I'm the president of the Richard Eisen fan club.
Well, we're back and forth then. I mean, we're simpatico like that. That for fans of yours and fans of your writing, that the fact that you have a new novel coming out right now, The Devil May Dance.
Comes out tomorrow.
Just like Die Hard, it's like Christmas in the summertime. You see what I'm saying?
I appreciate that.
You know what I mean? So people want to have their summer vacation and a page-turning book, which is what I did with the Hellfire Club on a beach, and it's perfect material for that. Perfect, perfect. So for their summers, it's like Christmas arriving out of season. Jake. That's why I kind of bring that up.
I appreciate it, and I love it, and I love where you're going. You're going to a positive place, and I appreciate
well,
that. Just so you know, people need to understand that when you karaoke with Rich Eisen, you are – it is basically – you sit down and you just listen to Rich Eisen sing Sinatra songs for an hour with a lovely voice, a deep baritone.
Well, but we need to say this, Jake. It's not because I hog the mic. I'm just giving the people what they want.
Yes, you know,
it's
request.
I take by request in the room.
Oh yes, yes, yes. No.
Okay.
You need to put asses in the seats. 100%. That's what that's about. It's not hogging the mic by any stretch. But my only point is, I think you will really enjoy this book because it presents Sinatra as a person, as a character, it warts and all, good things and bad things. And he is – the premise of the book is based on a real story, a real thing that happened, which is, as you know, Sinatra and the Rat Pack worked their heart out to elect JFK in 1960. And then Sinatra felt that when President Kennedy came to the – to California at some point, he would, of course, President Kennedy would stay with him at his Rancho Mirage compound. And he had all sorts of construction done to it. He had rooms built. He had telephone lines put in. He had a helipad built. And then Attorney General Robert Kennedy was starting to get hinky about this because he thought, you know, I am fighting organized crime here, and Sinatra literally is friends with mobsters. He's Sam Giancana has stayed at this compound. I don't know if I can let my brother stay there. That's the true story, and that was the premise for The Devil May Dance, which is Charlie and Margaret, my main characters from the Hellfire Club, he's a congressman, she's a zoologist, go out to investigate to find out if Sinatra is actually mobbed up, and he's in the middle of filming The Manchurian Candidate.
I love that.
And he meets all these folks. So I really, like, even if none of your listeners buy this book, you really will like this book. And I mailed you one, so you should have it arriving sometime soon. You will really like it. I guarantee it.
I have the book, Jake, and you know, I may or may not already have a photograph that of me reading it, not staged at all when I post it on Instagram. It's not staged at all, being totally engrossed by the material. Jake,
You will.
I can't wait.
And something else, there is a song in the book called The Devil May Dance that I wrote. I did not write the melody because I, as you know, do not have a good pitch.
Well, the great Sammy Kahn must have written it, right, Jake? I mean, if you're going to go real here, I mean...
Van Heusen, I think, was the... But this is... You'll enjoy this. So when the lawyers are going over the book to make sure that nobody can sue me or them, because there are all sorts of people, real people, most of them are dead, but real people... in the book, and the Church of Scientology makes an appearance, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and the thing that's amazing, Jake Tapper here on the Rich Eisen Show, and I will gladly toot your horn, sir, is, again, in the Hellfire Club, you mentioned...
Buy me dinner first, please.
No, seriously. What you just mentioned, you know, one of the characters, Margaret Martyr, is a zoologist. I mean, Brockman, you read the Hellfire Club. I'm learning about animals. I'm learning about everything about zoology. I'm learning about that stuff. Your research
is... In a fun way.
It's great.
Okay.
I'm not boring anybody. This is my way to point out that the research you do is intense. It's clear that you have researched everything, every last detail. And I'm sure you may have a person or people help you with that, but there you go. So when the hell do you have time to do all this? Did you write this book while you're covering the 2020 election?
Like, I wrote this book. Let's see, the first one came out in 2018. So I wrote it in 2018, 2019, and 2020. So I wrote it during those periods.
When the hell do you have time to do all this?
If you're in a writing project. And I assigned you a writing project. You might remember a couple years ago, I assigned you a book.
And I did nothing with it, Jake, because I'm a slacker compared to you.
That is a bestseller. You just have to sit there. But here's the deal.
Okay.
You already know all the stuff in your book, though. I'm not going to spoil it because that's your project.
Okay.
But if you are in the middle of a writing project and if you promise to yourself and you pledge to write 15 minutes a day, 15 minutes. You can find 15 minutes in your day. Lunch, breakfast, right before you go to bed. 15 minutes is not that hard. Even if that's all you do, at the end of the week, that's an hour, 45 minutes of writing. That's 4 pages, 3 pages. I mean, that's not nothing. So it adds up. And but let me tell. So anyway, I was able to do that. Plus, in 2020, I was at home broadcasting from April through August. Right. So there's an hour and a half commute I don't have anymore. Plus, you know, normally I would be traveling all over the country covering the presidential race. Not so much in 2020. I did two trips, once to Michigan to interview Biden, and then in December I drove to Delaware to interview him and the vice president. That was it. Those are my two trips. In no election year have I ever had so little travel. So I had more time on my hands than normal. But the thing I wanted to tell you about the fake Sinatra song that I wrote is, yes. So the lawyers are going through it, the book, to make sure that nobody can sue.
Yes.
And they say, you know, you can only put one line of a song in a book because otherwise people will sue you. The whoever owns the rights to the song will say, that's our property. You can't do more than fair use is one line, period.
Right.
So they're like, Tapper, you're crazy. You know that you can only do one line. We've been through this before, and you have an entire Sinatra song in here. Every lyric, and it's like wound through the climax of the book, which takes place at the 1962 Oscars. Like, what are you doing? And I said, it's not real. I made it up. It's not a real song. And that was like the, and they said, well, you need to put that in there because people are going to go crazy trying to Google it, trying to find it. But that's like the greatest compliment that you can give somebody.
Of course
like,
it
I
is.
Thought it was real. They thought it was real.
Well, it's also the fact of the New York Times in reviewing it said that what Janet Maslin said, she missed the book when she was done with it. So congrats on that, man.
She's tough. She gave a middling review of my first book. So for her to give such a nice review of this one meant a tremendous amount to me.
Well, I mean, I couldn't be more happy for you. What do I do with one of my friends here who you met in D.C. When you were on the show last, who finally took the recommendation of mine to watch The Manchurian Candidate, the old Sinatra film that was a classic but then removed from the theaters by Frank himself because of the assassination of John F. Kennedy and how it could be somehow construed for him to foreshadow it in the brilliant movie, that he watched the first half of it, stopped watching it. How long ago did you stop watching it, Chris?
It's got to be 6 months.
He hasn't
maybe.
Watched it again. What do I do with that, Jake?
You haven't watched. He hasn't watched the second half of
no,
it.
No.
Jake, in my defense,
dude, before you say what you've got going on, you just heard this man's work ethic. Okay, what he's got
yes,
going on
I
in his life.
I understand, but Jake, as Come you on. Might know, I have a 1-year-old. Like, yeah. I don't have any time. By the time he
dude,
goes
he's got
to bed,
two children.
But they're not. They're not one.
I can sympathize.
Like
I can
I'm sympathize. So exhausted at 7:30 every night. Like,
because you guys think Christmas comes in the Die Hard collection every
I
year.
I sympathize,
that's
but
years.
I will say that movie is really ahead of its time.
But young.
And
yeah.
Really trippy.
Not
like a
no.
Really weird movie. Like I
oh, yeah.
Watching it now. Mm. Watching and I just watched it a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Because some of my book takes place while they're filming this, Criterion asked me to do an intro to The Manchurian Candidate, which is a huge honor because I'm a huge fan of old classic films. So I watched it again, and oh my God, it is such a weird movie. It is, in a great way, very trippy, way ahead of its time. And the idea that it took place, that it came out a year before JFK was assassinated, where, you know, when the movie is about a major political assassination. Do you know this, by the way? Do you know that Arthur Krim, who was the head of United Artists, uh-huh. which released the film, and also a major Democratic fundraiser and advisor, Arthur Krim put a hold on it. He would not let the movie be made. And then Sinatra had to go to Hyannisport, beg President Kennedy, please tell Krim to let this happen. This is a great movie. And Kennedy had read the book, and the book is even more trippy than the movie. The book,
wow.
The mom of the assassin, there's actually like actual incest that takes place. In the movie, it's just like implied kind of.
Yes, that's right, with Angela Lansbury and whatever. But I guess.
And so Kennedy's reaction was, that's great. Who plays the mom? And at the time, they had not even cast Angela Lansbury. You know who Sinatra wanted in the part? Lucille Ball. True story.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Jake, I'm up against the end of an hour, as you know, to use a phrase that pays in the news business, so I'll have to leave it there. I love you, Jake Tapper. Congrats
too,
on
buddy.
This book. We'll chat
Thank
again
soon. Thank you so
soon.
Much. I'll talk
Congrats.
To you soon.
Everybody get the book. It's going to be amazing. The Hellfire Club is amazing. Jake is a remarkable mind, to say the least. I want to thank Joel Klatt, Peter King, Jason Light, and Jake Tapper. And I want to thank Urban Meyer for giving us the whole week to talk about Tim Tebow, because he's been signed by the Jaguars. Unbelievable. Set up tomorrow's show. When we come back on the radio, we'll see you Tuesday.